Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It's the marketing practice of creating a name, symbol, or design that identifies and differentiates a product from other products.
Product branding?
Yes. Okay. So I bring this up because we talked about it when we unboxed the Stranger Things. So it's already been done with Stranger Things. There's a starter set for D&D 5e that's branded Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit confusing because you would assume from the cover, oh, we're going to play the kids from Stranger Things. No. You're going to play the campaign that they played on the show. And it's going to kind of, we didn't get much information about what actually is happening. So they just kind of made something that is similar in tone.
So you're playing the kids who are playing D&D?
You're playing the characters that they played, or you can play. I think there's pre-gens of the characters that they played, and Will is the DM, and so it's Will's notebook with the adventure.
Right, so what I mean is like, you're almost kind of role-playing being the kids who are then role-playing a game of
yeah,
D&D.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
But not expressly stated that way.
Right, it doesn't say it that way, and it's a little bit odd because they have the Demogorg on the cover with the kid kind of fighting it, and it's not a character. It's not a fantasy character. It's one of the kids in 80s clothes resisting.
right, yeah.
So it doesn't quite come across correctly, and I think some people that have no idea what D&D is, like Stranger Things, buy this game and say, what is this?
I know where this is going. I know where the conversation is going, because this morning there was a release of like Rick and Morty version.
But
I didn't get into it with one of the writers, but I retweeted it, and then I think the writer, or the writer who's also done Rick and Morty D&D crossover comic books, kind of responded. Because I was kind of uncharitable. Not being that big a fan of D&D and being neutral on Rick and Morty, I just kind of said, okay, on the one hand, sure, more people in the hobby is a positive. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, this kind of feels like a cheap cash grab from Hasbro. Mm. And then I did a super nerd reference on the gripping hand.
Yes.
How long until we see a NASCAR-themed D&D? Kind of implying that D&D is now becoming the monopoly of role-playing games, which I kind of feel it is. That by no means meant that the people working on it did a poor job or didn't love the thing they were creating. I think it can simultaneously be that as well as a corporate cash grab. Mm. Because I bet you anything, Hasbro just said, okay, this is doing pretty popular. Rick and Morty is popular. If someone pitched it to them, they're like, sure, absolutely. So that is kind of my feeling. And I don't know if a rising tide floats all boats in the case of D&D.
I was really curious about that, both with Stranger Things and Rick and Morty, if that actually does bring people in. I did wonder if that was a good entry point into the hobby, because you like some property, you like some characters, and then you play this game with those characters, and it's like, oh, I kind of like the mechanics, I kind of like rolling dice. I'm not sure. Yeah, it just seems like they're making odd collector's items, because who actually plays all those different versions of Monopoly? Like, do people actually play 40K Monopoly and Star Wars Monopoly and
Dog Monopoly and the Harry Potter Monopoly? Yeah, I don't know. That's horrible socialism one.
Oh, right. Yeah, the parody. Yeah, right.
I don't know. Of course, it's D&D is not Monopoly, though. Might as well be. But I think people buy that Monopoly almost kind of like a joke, a little collector's item that just kind of sits there. Maybe you play it once. Like you, I'd be very curious to know whether these branded D&D starter sets actually attract new people to the hobby, or if it's people who already know about D&D saying, hey, I also like that thing. Let me buy it as a collector's item, because we all know gamers like to collect crap.
It just kind of tips the hand that, yeah, D&D is run by or is managed by a toy company. That's the thing that you really feel, like you're saying. You know, you feel the hand of Hasbro. This is an idea that, oh, this is a great crossover. I don't know if it kind of cheapens the experience. And maybe part of the thinking is, we're talking about branding, is it puts the brand on that same level of something you like. You've peripherally heard of Dungeons & Dragons. Right. Rick and Morty Dungeons & Dragons. Oh, they must be kind of equals in the geek pop culture world, because they are co-branding it. So I'm not sure. Yeah, and so the comics came out first. So it was Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragons.
Yep.
And I read a couple pages of those, and they reminded me so much of those Bongo comics, the Simpsons comics that Bongo did. And I think originally they had some Simpsons writers involved, or Matt Groening or something. So it came off very legitimate at the beginning, and then just kept going. And the writing is just okay. It feels like those, just any kind of those, branded comics that are based on an animated show or something that the people involved in the creation of the characters and shows aren't working on.
Right.
It's just a secondhand thing. And it just feels kind of hollow and empty. And they, throw around some of the same phrases from the show and a little bit of the tone, but the art, the models off on the art a little bit, and it doesn't add anything.
Right.
And so I didn't understand why they did it, why they were doing a series. And all the covers, of course, are parodies of famous like modules, famous D&D art. it doesn't really parody anything. It just kind of puts D&D in the Rick and Morty universe.
Right, okay.
In those comics. And I was like, okay, I guess, you know, that would exist, but is that interesting?
I don't know. I've like I said, I've watched like two episodes of Rick and Morty. My biggest takeaway from the show is their fans are nuts because they did that Szechuan sauce thing. Not an endorsement of the show at all. So I knew those comics existed. Mm-hmm. Similar to a discussion we may have had previously about a D&D movie. Mm-hmm. I don't think D&D really has that strong of a fantasy setting. Mm-hmm. Kind of the basic D&D is just kind of kitchen sink. So I'm wondering what makes it D&D unless you're doing a meta thing where they're playing the game. Only looking at the covers, as you said, kind of making them parodies of old box modules that only people who play D&D are going to get. Mm-hmm. But seeing like the characters crouching behind giant dice or seeing dice in the cover makes me wonder if they're doing that meta thing where it's like it's the characters playing the game, or even if they're in the fantasy world, they realize it's a game and can make kind of mechanical references and stuff like that. And I don't know. Does that work? I don't know. Is it funny? Maybe. Could you go for a long time? Maybe. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, it's weird. And that the writing on that show is so sharp that doing like a blander version of it, just like, I don't quite get it. Just like with The Simpsons. I mean, the you know early seasons of The Simpsons, the writing is so amazing. And the kind of watered down writing they did for the comics is like, why would you spend time with this? I mean, I guess if you like those characters and you just want more, just like Star Wars novels whatever, you want to keep immersing yourself in that IP, you rub it all over you.
Yeesh, that's an uncomfortable image. Comparing it to the Star Wars expanded universe, what you're telling me is when Simpsons and all this other stuff gets bought by Disney, they're just going to like take an axe to all that quote extended universe stuff and say, nope, that's no longer canon. It's only this.
Yeah. Oh, did that happen? Wait a minute. Because they bought Fox. The only thing they don't have is Fox News. So does Disney own The Simpsons?
Never thought about that. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know if it's just like Fox Studios, movie studios, or if it's, wow. Because I know that, they spun off News Corp as a separate company. And I think Disney bought it. That's terrifying.
Well, I guess, like bringing it back to TTRPGs and D&D, like that is kind of what I most objected to. I kind of wondered, okay, are we intentional or not? Are we seeing a kind of Disney level monopoly kind of IP grab if D&D decides to start doing all these brandings? I guess the argument is D&D is a gateway hobby. People will eventually find other things and gravitate to those if they like or continue to play other games. And sure, I wonder if they're being multiple different flavors of D&D makes that harder to do. Because why would you, or my feeling is, why would you play or look at this other game when there's a version of D&D that maybe does that thing?
Right. That's interesting, yeah.
I mean, if you compare it to the Monopoly thing, I mean, other games still do exist. I mean, but then again, people realize how shit a game Monopoly is, and I don't think we're at that point with D&D.
I think that might be a good topic for like actually an entire extended conversation podcast, like getting
everybody
in, together and get some decent opinions, because we touched on it with Stranger Things, and it was the quality and everything was pretty disappointing.
Oh, really?
Of the Stranger Things set, but it was so cheap. I mean, actually, the only reason I have it is because I wanted free shipping. So.
Right. Yeah. So you bought it to get free shipping on something else. Right. All right.
And basically, I guess it ended up being kind of the same. Either I would own that or pay for shipping. So I decided to own that instead. From the details of the Rick and Morty set, it sounds like they kind of rebranded the Essentials kit.
Okay.
Because it's the larger set of dice. It gives you a GM screen. Maybe not the cards. Everything else. The pre-gen characters and the two books, the rule book and then the campaign adventure book. So it sounds more like the Essentials box, which is good because it's got like a $30 price tag on it. So it should be considered, you know, there should be something in it besides a little bit of Rick and Morty art. As we talked about last week, I'm dragging my daughter.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah. Yes.
They're pretty open to it. And they said all of their friends, like their circle of friends, everybody around them is trying to get them to play D&D.
Really?
Okay. And they've just kind of resisted up to this
point. Oh, they've resisted.
Yeah.
Did they say why? Because they don't want to be giant nerds?
Yeah, because neither of them are like theater geeks or anybody that's like into performance. And I think a lot of their friends are more, you know, like improv and you know, people that like to talk and like to tell jokes and be funny, like be like the center of attention.
Right.
And that works well with role playing because you kind of hand that off. Mm-hmm. They said that, yeah, just like they were just too worried, depending on the group of people, that it would just be so uncomfortable that they wouldn't really do anything. They just kind of sit back and watch things happen.
Right. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I would be very curious to know if their friends are kind of, and I hate to say the word established, if they're relatively new to the hobby and if they got into the hobby because of something like Critical Role.
Yeah.
And if that's the where they're getting the mm-hmm. kind of incorrect or not, if that's where they're getting the impression that improv theater people, kind of outgoing people who like to talk and be funny and be the center of attention, are the ones who role play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would just be interested in kind of some data on that. Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah, that might be something worth asking them. Like if they know if their friends watch any of that or are familiar, because
it's pretty much I think impossible to escape from.
That's true. Yeah, so with voice actors and you know amateur actors and things wanting to present role playing to you, you do get the idea of like, wow, this is super theatrical. Mm-hmm. And can I do that? Can I change my voice enough to be convincing?
Yeah.
Can I sew the costume?
yeah, that's it too. I mean, like the props we use in like the Alien game and stuff mm-hmm. like that, those were great. And I mean, I liked making, not exactly the same, but I liked making props. But mm-hmm. I've wondered if kind of the more theatrical video productions of mm-hmm. actual plays are making new people wonder if that's part of the hobby. And the answer mm-hmm. is no. I mean, sure, on the one hand, it's sometimes not that interesting to just watch people role playing.
Yes.
So I understand wanting to use props and costumes and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. then, yeah, does that make new people think it's a requirement for the hobby mm-hmm. and keep them out? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was helping with our live stream of the Aliens RPG that kind of came across, that we weren't like super into it and mm. we were like kind of fighting even the setting. Like it was a little jokey, a little goofy. And they're like, yeah, you can do that. Just enjoy the game session and enjoy the people that you're with, instead of like, can I impress them? Am I going to be elf enough for them?
Yeah. Yeah, or that's the other aspect, I guess, doing those. I've talked to people who said they wouldn't want to do live stream games or actual plays of games like that, because they would be too worried of what the audience think, or too mm-hmm. worried about playing up for the audience. Where my perspective is like, I'm just playing a game mm-hmm. and it happens to be recorded. So I'm not worried about what all the people watching think, but I realize not everybody is like that.
So. Yeah. You know, I think there's definitely room for a wide variety of that kind of thing. If, you know, people watching an entertaining kind of performance of a role-playing game versus watching people actually interact with a system and roll dice and play right. with the game. I think there's room for both. I will keep you updated with that. So we're probably just going to, because it seems like they want to do characters, because they look through the pre-gens and the starter set. Like, yeah, this is kind of generic. What about if I did this? And I'm like, okay,
oh, really?
Then okay. we should make characters. Yeah, because they kind of both had character concepts that they wanted to play with. And I think it'll make for some interesting, because they're familiar with the fantasy tropes right. from like PC RPGs, that they want to subvert some of that already. They're like, yeah, but what if
cool.
So I'm really curious to see how that goes. That might help them not be so afraid to like try it out with you know friends at university. We will see. I'll keep an update. And Lyle had an idea of doing basically like a generation gap session.
Oh, yeah.
Like okay. having young players and old players, and just like what their expectations are and what's different about,
I mean, play a game.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. play together and see how different the approach is. We've already kind of done that, because Jackson is definitely much younger than anybody. He's run sessions before, so yeah, we've experienced a little bit.
Wondered why everyone else at the table was falling asleep right. or not able to schedule things on like a weekly basis.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of quick updates. Free League released some downloads
for the
Alien RPG. So now we have character sheets, printer-friendly character sheets, mm-hmm. sheets for the ships, and then all the ships that are in all of the stuff that they've released so far. And I think also a generic, like a blank ship. No, I don't think
they have a blank ship sheet as well, because right. the preview of one of the chapters we got was about ships and shipbuilding.
That's right.
So
that's
we have a character sheet and a ship sheet, and both in printer-friendly formats.
That's great. Yeah, I'm glad that, and obviously that means they're paying attention. That's a great sign that a company is like seeing all the things that fans and players are making for their sessions and saying, well, we should release the mm-hmm. official version. And also, so maps as well, and then wallpapers.
The wallpaper art.
Great art. Yeah, so we've used a few of those. You've probably seen a few of those in our thumbnails. It's gorgeous art, so that's nice they released
that. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what the final book looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really curious too. But the pages they've released so far, it looks good. Like the layout.
Yeah,
the layout seems pretty satisfying. And also from Free League, they released errata for Forbidden Lands.
Okay.
So the Player's Handbook and the GM book have gotten errata much more in the Player's Handbook. And they've also announced, I guess because some of the things in the system, people had questions and they just had to kind of clarify.
So more clarification rather than we made a mistake.
Right. I think there were just things that people thought this should happen and why isn't this happening, or this contradicts. There were some contradictions that they may have wanted to eliminate. But along with that, they also announced on September 11th, They are going to launch a Kickstarter for Bitterlands. And
Bitterlands. Yes. B-I-T-T-E-R.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's the northern kind of icy expanse. Okay, so they hinted about that basically the map that they give you in Forbidden Lands is restricted by the sea and then mountain ranges.
Right,
and there's passes through these mountains that are the in lore how the characters got into this area, but they're kind of restricted to that zone. But that their future expansions were going to be beyond the northern mountains, beyond the western mountains, and then into the eastern sea.
I mean, that just kind of makes sense. I mean, you start with... it's like when you're kind of GMing a game anyway, you start with a little location, then, hey, if it's kind of successful, great.
Yeah.
Now we can kind of expand beyond it in multiple directions. So that makes sense. Yeah.
I'm curious to see how they're going to handle. So if you're going to start here and how you're going to transition to there, or your party starts in those icy bitter lands.
Well, I am the only Free League game I'm kind of remotely familiar with is Alien. Mm-hmm. But I think I flipped through a couple of the Mutant Year Zero books and you have a bunch of them. And it seems like while those settings kind of all and kind of little enclosures all connect, there are also starting points for new characters in that specific thing. So I would not be surprised if that's what they did. It's like, okay, Forbidden Lands, you start here. In Bitter Lands, you can move your characters up, or here's where you can start from if you want to just do a new campaign.
Right.
Because then from a player standpoint, I guess you would have to buy Forbidden Lands if you want like the core rule set. But if you didn't, I mean, if they made it kind of like a standalone but compatible book, you could then just buy Bitter Lands and you would want a starting point for people who just did that. So.
Right. Along with this, speaking of the core set, they're going to do a reprint of the core books, including the Errata.
Okay.
How do you feel about that? Because, I mean, PDFs, are, you know, they can easily release new versions of PDFs, but that's happened a couple of times now. Like big core books that I've bought, they very soon, like within a year, include things that are easy to include in a digital version, and then they reprint, and you basically have to rebuy for the same price a core book. And I don't know, that feels, I would rather just like print out an errata sheet or whatever instead of having, but I guess new players, people new to that system, it's for them.
Which is exactly what I was going to say. But, and I think providing an errata sheet is kind of the way to bridge that gap. Because sure, as a customer, it kind of sucks when you're just like, I just bought this thing, and now there's a new version that's like the latest version, that's not great. From a company standpoint, you don't want people buying the incorrect version, so you got to do a reprint. And I guess the way to kind of make everyone as happy as possible is to say, and here's the errata sheet, and maybe even format it in such a way where people could like cut stuff out if they wanted to and paste it into their book.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I mean, I think we're feeling that tension between like the analog and digital world with those sorts of things, because it's good that systems stay active and people kind of correct mistakes or clarify contradictions and confusing rules. It's good that happens. But yeah, when you're printing books, it's so frustrating. It's like, oh, I have this set and now I'm never going to open this book again.
Yeah.
If I accidentally read that goblin rule, then...
The goblin rule. Now someone's going to have to invent the goblin rule. Yeah, that's what just call a reprinted book. Oh, they goblin ruled.
Yeah, so those are two things that Free League is up to. The only other thing that I wanted to bring up was a Kickstarter that just ended today.
Oh, really? Oh, it ended today. All right.
So we're not really promoting it, but I want to just kind of talk a little bit about it because I thought it was an interesting idea and I liked the origin of it.
Okay.
So this is a game called Never Knows Best by Fraser Simons. And it's a seventh game. He's the creator of The Veil, cyberpunk setting. I read a little bit of The Veil and haven't played it, but interested in it, and I like how he does game systems.
Oh, really? Because I have a copy, hard copy of The Veil.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we should talk later. Yeah. So he said that this system is kind of a combination of Powered by the Apocalypse and Blades in the Dark.
Okay.
How it's going to run. And it's based on kids, because his inspiration was a Japanese anime called, the American title is Furikuri, but it's Furikuri, spelled just F. L-C-L. And basically, it's a six-episode series that every episode they're kind of trying to answer the question, what is that? What does that mean?
Yeah,
it's
kind
of Japanese nonsense word, and it can mean something and it can't mean something. And it's very good that it's ambiguous, because the whole idea is the ambiguity of being young. So the main character is Naota, who is a 12-year-old boy in Japan in a small town. And the town is very strange because there's a big factory on the hill that blows steam and sounds a siren every so often. And they don't know what it really manufactures, but it's the...
Funny enough, you said that. My first apartment here, I lived like I guess what was a big refinery. And we're just like, I have no idea what that thing makes. It's just belching smoke out of nowhere.
Right.
And so the joke was, it was one of kind of like a Philip K. Dick factory that just made other factories.
Right. Yes. So exactly like that. So kind of a rural Japanese setting. The main character, his brother, goes to America to play baseball.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Leaving behind his girlfriend. And his girlfriend is missing the boyfriend, and so focuses all of her attention on the younger brother.
That sounds healthy.
And yes, and so she's matured and a little more sexual and is constantly flirting and teasing him, hugging him from behind, kissing his ears. It's kind of triggering something in him. She's constantly kind of trying to challenge him, and they do some really nice things that are very Japanese in culture, where she buys a sour drink from the machine and tells him to drink it. And kids like sweet things. Nah. Adults like sour things. And so he, you know, forces himself, pretends to drink it, and then just, you know, throws it because kids don't like sour things. He doesn't like sour things yet. He's not there yet. And so she's this thing kind of pushing him. And then another female character is introduced. So Haruko comes in on her Vespa scooter,
that's right.
Clubs him in the head with her bass guitar and puts a bump on his head, knocks him out. And then they do this interesting thing where the spot that he was hit, a horn starts to grow. And so it's kind of showing his you know, maturity, his, like, something's coming out of him. Something's getting excited, maybe by his brother's girlfriend. He's coming of age. He's kind of maturing, but it's messed up. And what ends up, you know, coming out of his head is a robot.
Yeah, with a TV screen for him, right? Right.
And so that was the inspiration for this game. So basically, you play teenagers. There's different playbooks of different types of teenagers. And what you have to decide is what your strengths are and your weaknesses are. Mm-hmm. And both of those things can manifest themselves as robots. He says in this that you turn into the robot. But right. I like the visual of it actually.
The horn popping out of
your head. But it coming out of you because it is like an internal thing that made external. And so you have to state what those things are, how you're interacting with the world, how the town has affected you, what your room looks like. So kind of kid things that if I hadn't ever played Monster Hearts or Tales from the Loop would not have interested me at all.
Right. Oh, right. Because you're playing a kid.
Yes. This anime is really good. It's really dense and really interesting. And
really weird, too.
Yeah, yeah. And the funny thing is the creator said this was the first anime he ever saw. So in the U.S., this played constantly, like midnight on Adult Swim. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was kind of the Rocky Horror Picture Show for a while of
Adult Swim. Disney won't cancel showings of it.
Yeah. Right. But it's funny because it was kind of the last anime that I ever thought was any good and never gave any attention to. But the setting and the idea is really good. And he's saying this is not Furikuri the game.
Right.
This is just inspired by. And so the idea is your strength is something that you can use to fight external things, and your weaknesses are the enemies you're going to have to face. Everything is manifested as some kind of creature or robot.
Okay. Cool.
And then you have mechanics to, like, they do battle.
You said the Kickstarter ended, and like I had seen this before and not really had time to check it out. Maybe there's going to be some kind of backer kit or pre-order, because that's not always, but sometimes that happens, you know, where it's like, okay, Kickstarter's closed, but you can still order it from backer kit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to look at it because I'm immediately thinking of, like, hacking it. Like, I'm wondering, like, would everything have to be a robot, or could you go, like, kind of weird and dark and, like...
Oh, yeah. Like Lovecraftian. Kind of,
exactly. I was thinking Lovecraftian stuff.
Oh, that would be excellent. The specific thing about this is he's saying that this is an Ashcan release.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So this is not a finished game. It doesn't have all the teaching rules in it. It's just the bare bones system of how he wants this to be played. So I think the only thing that you're missing by the Kickstarter being over is the Kickstarter exclusive kind of notebook version of the rules. So he made a version of the rules that's going to look like a kid's notebook, and they have space in it to actually write things in, some extra notes for, like, how to run the game, and some ideas that give you a little bit more information. But I think it's going to be available on itch.io.
Okay, cool.
And also on DriveThruRPG as PDFs already. Because he's saying it's not in a final version. Cool. This is still a work in progress, but it's playable. It's at the state where it's playable.
I wonder if the notebook version is going to be like a US composition notebook, or like kind of like one of those Japanese style notebooks.
Yeah, they had a placeholder image of the notebook, and it did look like a kind of something a kid put together, kind of like there's a guitar and there's the initials for the game, and kind of like a design. So it didn't quite look like one of those Japanese campus notebooks or anything, but it had that tone. And the artwork, there's some nice black and white artwork, nice color work, and nice black and white for the inside and probably for the playbooks as well.
Cool. I'm going to have to go look on itch.io for it then, because that is not my preferred format to buy digital PDF games.
Nice.
Because creators get a much bigger cut than a DriveThruRPG.
And that's nice. And he also said that both DriveThruRPG and itch.io have the library, you know, so you buy something and it's always there. Yep. So you never have to, I deleted that, or my computer crashed, so I lost my PDF. You always have a digital library with a download. So I think that's worth checking out. So Never Knows Best, the title comes from the girlfriend, of course, sneaks cigarettes out in her sweater, and they're all bent and messed up. And she wrote Never Knows Best on one of the cigarettes that she's smoking. And he's telling her, you shouldn't be smoking. And she's like, no.
Welcome to Japan. Everyone does it. It's not that big a deal.
That setting could be really nice. And if you're familiar with that anime at all and have a little bit of that, have that imagery in your head, and especially the music. So the Pillows, the Japanese band The Pillows, did the soundtrack for the entire anime, and that's the tone and that's the feeling of the whole thing. And it really, as opposed to other anime that uses other types of bands, this is more of like a garage band, kind of like a simple, you know, guitar, bass, drums kind of.
I'm laughing because you are trying very hard not to piss off our J-pop fans, but I don't think we have any.
That's good. I think a Pillow CD would definitely would set the tone correctly for the session.
Cool.
So take a look for that, Never Knows Best by Fraser Symons, and I will put a link to anything that there is in the notes. Cool. About that. And a quick comment from last week.
Ooh,
we had a nice comment from a...
you're talking about mine, right?
Yes. Yeah.
The comment I left.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about you. Chris, you left a really great comment on what we had. Gagrin said that he really liked your story that talked about the player meta and the character's motivation clash to keep the game going. And that's a great example of how to do that. And I think that's why we're doing this, because I think so much of what's funny or entertaining on YouTube or the internet about RPGs is the bullshit that happens and the you know, all the ridiculous like session ruining, group ruining things. And it's funny and it's dramatic and it's silly, but people actually playing well and, you know, impressing other people with how they're, you know, staying in the spirit of the game and navigating their character, I think is a much happier story.
The don'ts are funny.
Yes.
But you want to show like do's as well, because people are looking for advice.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll keep at that. We'll try to be a more positive example about, not just bring all your personal garbage and dump it out. And
depending on what happens. Or if you're playing Never Knows Best, then all your garbage becomes a biomechanical robot that pops out of your head.
Right. Yeah. And you have to kill it.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, which actually wouldn't be that bad.
So that was great to hear. And great to hear that we have listeners and we're having interaction.
That's what I was most excited about. Like, oh, wow, comments. Yeah, sweet.
We will keep at it and also keep discussing like sessions and things that we've had so you can hear what's going on. Because, you know, you didn't record that session.
Oh, no, I didn't. Yeah.
So it's good to, you know, recount those sorts of happy, impressive things that happen at the table. Where can people find you?
As always, on Twitter. I'm at HiveMind, HiveMynd. You'll see my kind of recent alien rant about there, because that's all I'm talking about recently. Recently started, listening to the audiobook novelization of the original Alien.
Oh, nice.
Interesting. They have professional dreamers in that setting.
Really?
It's kind of weird. But anyway, you can also find me. I have a blog, Fantastic Fate Resources, for Patreon, Fantastic Fate Resources as well. But I've actually paused it because I wasn't able to get the Spider Elves resource that was originally going to be for August done to a standard that I wanted to release. I don't like the resources I've made. So rather than release it and charge people, because I was on the monthly thing, I just said, okay, I'm going to pause the Patreon and it'll get released in September, end of the month. And I want to release something that I'm happy releasing. So everything just got paused and pushed back for a month. So that's Fantastic Fate Resources, either .com or at Patreon.
And I do a live stream drawing my weekly cartoon. So abusecartoons.com is the website. And currently the archive is still out of commission.
Oh, really? I was wondering, yeah.
You can see everything on gocomics.com/domesticabuse. 2 cartoons a week, Sunday night, North American time. I draw all those cartoons and talk about them and show you things from Japanese convenience stores, as well as read comments from last week's cartoons. On Twitter at abusecartoons and on Patreon at patreon.com/abusecartoons. So if you'd like to get in touch with Utter Red Hands, leave us some comments, some feedback.
We will read them.
Yes. Please visit utterredhands.com. There you'll see everything that we've done, the podcast, the videos, all of the downloadable resources. The YouTube channel is going to include this non-video podcast, as well as all of the things we do, unboxing and live streams and reviews of various systems. And then, of course, you can subscribe to the podcast and get this weekly in your ears. In this podcast, we just kind of give you a sense of what's going on and what you may be seeing in the future on longer form versions of both videos. Right. And the podcast itself. So you can follow Idle Red Hands on Twitter at Idle Red Hands. And if you'd like to get involved in the podcast, let us know what you want to see next. Tell us what looks interesting, what you'd like us to review. Please visit patreon.com/idleredhands. And that is it for this week. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Running on some Sunday.